Hi, this is the Game Mavens Podcast. Your usual host, the person who brings everyone together, Joey Shinogashu, is not available now. My name's Cole McGrath. I'm from this game called Infamous 2. You may have heard of it. It's not bad. Yeah, and this other guy I've got on here. What's your name? Yeah, give us your name.
I'm Adam Jensen from Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, how are your arms going?
It's I didn't ask for this, but now that I have them, it's pretty sweet.
That's great. It's great to hear. Got a samurai sword for some reason.
Awesome.
No blood happening whenever I slap people with it. I think it's the sword I'm catching. I'm not sure.
That's pretty impressive.
I lost my crowd there for a moment. So yeah. All right. Yeah. So yeah. Starting out over. Actually, keep that in there. This is the Game Mavens Podcast. It's been a long time coming this episode, and this specific episode, yeah, because it was supposed to be like in April when Metal Gear Solid 2 actually happens, you know, which is what we're covering today, because we're also going to be just doing all the Metal Gear games this year, and various things like laziness and people not being available, which is like, you know, both things that cannot be controlled, really, here or there.
Laziness is a wild beast.
Yes. And, yeah, but then we're back, we're here. And I'm the host that brings someone together, George Noguchu. And flip that around there for a minute.
That was good. I like the reversal.
Yeah, thank you. And once again, join me, not Adam Jensen.
Yes, George Kokoris. Hi, how you doing? Hailing from Orlando, Florida, for another 6 days.
Sweet.
And then I will be. In Seattle full time. Woohoo!
Yes, a lot of stuff has happened since then for you. Congratulations very much for your.
Thank you.
Congratulation.
Thank you. Congratulation. A winrar is me.
Congratulation.
Congratulation. I like that. I see what you did there.
I was wondering if I would fly it, because I did.
No, that was.
So, you're going to Seattle for Microsoft Game Studio?
Yes. Working at Microsoft Game Studios as a designer. No final decision on which project I'm going to be on, but I'm going to be either at the Redmond campus or right next door in Kirkland, working at 343. So that means it's either going to be Kinect stuff or it's going to be Halo 4. So we'll see.
Rock and roll, man.
It's. I'm pretty stoked. Pretty, awesome. Pretty stoked.
Yeah. How many of just like random question? How many people like that graduate alongside you, Full Sail, are going with you?
I actually have one classmate with whom I worked on my final project, who's also working out there with me. He's now a test engineer at 343 Industries. So yeah, we're pretty excited. Definitely looking forward to getting to work, because been getting stir-crazy around here.
It's going to get, like, super difficult to get you on the show again, so it's, like, great to, like, have you here for the last hurrah off anything.
Thank you. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. I feel like once I'm back at a 9-to-5 job, I might actually have an easier time making time, because I can actually manage my day now, as opposed to just kind of winging everything.
Oh, yeah. This is very true.
But we'll see. We'll see. I'm glad to be here now, so we can talk about this MGS2 up in here.
Yes, Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty. past episode, when Mark was like, you know, beige, Mark Whiting, like, he asked us, like, what was Metal Gear to us and stuff, and I give like, a sort of a rushed answer that ended up not being in that episode, because I figured out, like, Metal Gear for me was Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, because Metal Gear 1 is, like, something I watched my uncle play, and it was, you know, he played it, and I was, like, everything spoiled for me, so then I was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of cool. And then, like, it was the lead-up to Metal Gear Solid 2 that got me hyped into the series, like, seeing, like, all the stuff in the E3. In fact, let's just go back to, like, the E3, like, reveal, which is, like, E3's been, like, a big thing for games and stuff, and it's, like, that was, like, one of the first times that I was, like, super, super important for a game. Coming out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a huge reveal for the game, especially since, you know, like, Metal Gear Solid on the PS1 had been, at least in the West, it was, you know, it was kind of a surprise hit. You know, very, very few gamers in the West were familiar with Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 on the NES and MSX and all that kind of craziness. You know, the first Metal Gear Solid was, I mean, it was the first that, you know, most Westerners had heard of that series. And, you know, it kind of, at least from our perspective, came out of nowhere. And it was this, you know, huge, like, cinematic revelation. Holy shit, what's this crazy with all these fucking cutscenes and shit? And that was, I mean, you know, that in itself was pretty wild. So, naturally, for Metal Gear Solid 2 to be announced, that was, you know, that was like the first big reveal. Oh shit, it's the next game in the series, we're going to a new console. Sony had been, you know, Sony had put a lot of effort and a lot of time into hyping the power of the PS2. So, you know, the expectations were enormous, and, you know, that first reveal of the demo at, I guess that was E3...
2000,
yeah. That was huge.
Yeah, I remember that that trailer was on the PlayStation magazine, official PlayStation magazine demo disc.
Yeah.
I think that was the one with the blue, simply blue, with, like, the PlayStation symbols on it, just like the box.
Yeah,
for,
yeah.
PS2. And then, like, that was, you know, even though it was, like, a PS, you know, obviously a PS1 disc, but then, and then also sort of, like, kind of compressed and stuff, but then, like, the video was just, like, so amazing to watch. I remember watching it over and over again. And then also, I didn't know, like, about the whole, like, Kojima putting stuff after the you know, the little block with, like, the credits block, so that I would press it, you know, just to be like, okay, just watch it again. But I didn't know there would be, like, that scene at the end where, like, Ray is just, like, making the whole ship explode.
Yeah.
And then, like, the one soldier kicks the other one away. He's like, dude, back up.
Yeah, I mean, I think for most people, that was the promotion and marketing of Metal Gear Solid 2, I think, was the first experience that most people had with the full force of Kojima's kind of weird sense of humor, because, you know, Metal Gear Solid, you know, it definitely had it, you know, it had that quirkiness that has always defined Kojima games, you know, that from the Psycho Mantis controller trick to, you know, like, kind of Snake's weird sort of creepiness crawling around through air ducts and looking down at Meryl doing her sit-ups, and, like, and there's always this kind of vague sort of, like, Snake's kind of a creeper, isn't he? And, you know, so, I mean, that kind of attitude, that sort of left field approach, I think had already been established, but the weirdness of Kojima's sense of timing and his sense of humor, where, you know, he will do things like, let's have this huge, massive, fucking epic trailer where shit's going really crazy and it's all super intense or whatever, and then we're going to do the big credits block, and then after the credits, we're going to have another giant explosion just because we can, because nobody's going to be expecting it, and then right after that, let's do some, like, silly fucking comic relief bullshit, which... You know, I mean, like, now, of course, everybody knows, oh, yeah, that's fucking Kojima right there.
That trailer was so, like, so movie thing. Like, in the beginning, the block is, like, the following teasers in Fruva All Ages by Konami or something like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then, like,
they mimic
shows, like,
that green MPAA slate and all that shit.
It had, like, a show, like, both gameplay footage and shots of, like, stuff that that you couldn't have in part one. Like, suddenly, like, Snake's aiming, like, his M9 in first-person view.
Yeah.
And he's, like, shot a tranquilizer dart, the guard's asleep. And, like, all the environmental, like, reaction, like, the props, like, exploding, and, like, that bag of flour exploding, and then, like, Snake's, like, he suddenly, like, sneezes.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah, and, like, I remember one of the big things, I don't remember if it was in the E3 reveal trailer, but one of the bits of video footage that got shown a lot was the shootout in the storage room with all of the watermelons on the shelves.
Oh yeah.
And there were just watermelons exploding, and there was just like red particle effects all over the place, and everybody was, and you know, I mean, at the time, that was a big fucking deal. Like, holy shit, the PS2 is so fucking powerful. Oh my god, it was
like two Glukovich guys on one side and that Snake and the other one, like suddenly like leaning against the like the grate and then just jumping out and like shooting this bomb mess.
Yep.
Everything exploding. And then like speaking of exploding, like at the very end when like the Harry Grayson Williams arranged version of the main theme, and then like it goes like da da da, you know, that the main part at the end. When you see like it starts panning across like Metal Gear Ray and like Ocelot's like, we're taking it back and stuff. And then like Snake's running down the hallway and it's like everything's exploding behind him, and people are just like,
yeah.
And I remember hearing like John Davison would always talk about how like Sam Kennedy would be the first one to stand up and go, wow, just like clapping. Everyone else is like stunned silence.
Yeah.
Because like, did that just happen?
Yeah, I mean, that was a wild reveal. That whole trailer, I mean, like, and all of the trailers, I mean, you know, leading up to it, I mean, I remember there had to have been at least one trailer that was like a good 4 or 5 minutes long.
And then, because it was an old Japanese voice, so I don't think any of us actually knew who was speaking there. But then, obviously, we could infer, like, Liko was coming back.
Yeah.
Hisashiburi da na! Kyo wa da! Omae wa! So! Or whatever. But, yeah. It was funny, like, I watched that, more or less watched that trailer, like, the next year, E3 2001. That was when I was finally, like, my sister would start buying, like, PlayStation Magazine, like, the Ziff Davis one. I think it was, like, the first one was, like, the Medal of Honor one. And then they had the MGS1 demo again. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this game. And then I started playing. I was like, oh yeah, this is great. And then finally caught like in the issues. They would have like the screenshots from the trailer of like the cyborg ninja and the tanker, and like they talk about how Fortune is like this boss that she can't die. So how would you fight her and stuff? All that stuff.
Yeah.
And Vamp is just like Cray Fox. He's slicing people off, and Solid Snake. People to reveal Solid Snake, like the big boss looking Snake.
Yep. I mean, all of those. I mean, that's actually now that I think about it, I don't know of any game from before Metal Gear Solid 2 whose like kind of I guess like PR and promotion kind of revolved around these kind of steady reveals of characters. You know, where you know you'd have like an exclusive in some magazine. Ah, you know, here's our first look at you know, the new cyborg ninja, or you know, like first glimpse at you know, fucking you know, like Fortune or Vamp or any one of the.
Scott Shaggy said like, here's like 5 paragraphs about the ice cubes melting.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, even things like that. I mean, there was. Yeah. Oh God, that was one hell of a Molyneux moment, wasn't it? Where it's just like, oh yeah, you know, if you shoot a glass and ice spills out onto the floor, the ice will melt eventually.
Yeah, and then like in the tanker that LCD TV, if you punch it, it actually like just it actually like breaks.
Yeah.
And like it just seems out. Man, all that lead up, and also like I didn't have a. They didn't have the MGS2 demo on the MVM disc, so I never actually did get to play that demo until long after the fact. But then reading about like people buying Zone of the Enders just to get that demo, and
well,
then submitting their times.
It was funny. The you know, the situation with Zone of the Enders was actually very similar to the situation with Crackdown. You know, when Crackdown was released, a handful of the game discs included access to the Halo 3 beta. and a lot of people bought Crackdown so they could get into the beta, but the beta wasn't going to open up for another, like, 2 or 3 weeks, so people just started playing Crackdown and then realized that it was actually a good game. And, you know, the same thing happened with Zone of the Enders. You know, I still have my original copy of Zone of the Enders that has the MGS2 demo disc. And, you know, I remember, you know, the first thing that I did, I opened it up and I took out the MGS2 demo disc and I put it in and I played the demo like 4 fucking times. And then, you know, then after I was done with it, I was like, all right, so this is Zone of the Enders thing. Let's, you know, let's see. I'm a fan of mech games. And then, of course, it ended up becoming one of my favorite games of all time. You know, as sort of like corny and you know, horribly translated in Japanese as it is.
As anime as it was. As straight up as anime, like in video game form.
Yeah, it exactly. I think if we were going to use the word anime as an adjective, I think Zone of the Enders would be the perfect thing to use that for. And you know, despite that, I absolutely loved the game. But that demo, I remember playing the MGS2 demo and being just completely thunderstruck by the power of this fucking machine. You know, I feel like that was the first time that I had played a PS2 game that like really felt like kind of that felt like unmistakably like a you know, like a PS2 game, like a game that was only possible on a piece of hardware like that. You know, there's that very specific feeling that you get of playing a game like that, where, you know, in the back of your mind, you're constantly aware of the fact that yes, this is the kind of experience that requires hardware this powerful. And I, you know, I didn't really get that, I didn't really have that experience again until like years and years later when I played Assassin's Creed. You know, that was the first game that I played on like a next gen console that felt like a next gen game. And you know, MGS2 was huge like that. I mean, you know, the quality of the animations, the level of detail in the world was like completely new for the time.
And like comparing it again to part one, like all the interactions, like you hold up the enemies and like make them, force them to shimmy and like give up, surrender their items or their dog tags and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And you shoot their hand to make them like unable to only use like their, I think like their assault rifle or something like that.
Yeah.
You can only use a one-handed weapon.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of little things that I remember being like such a huge deal then. It was, I mean, you know, at the time, I guess, you know, we're so used to the breadth of interaction that we have now that, you know, it almost feels silly to look back and realize how excited we were by the fact that you could hang off a ledge.
Oh my god, yeah. And then you could do, like, pull-ups, and then increase
the strength
of your
gauge. Yeah, you could do pull-ups that would increase the strength of your grip gauge. And now that's actually kind of an interesting thing, right? That we look back to the introduction of those game mechanics. And, we see that we got so excited about the fact that Snake could now hang from a ledge, you know, which he, you know, was literally impossible to do in Metal Gear Solid 1. And we look back at that and we realize, oh, well, I mean, you know, I guess that's not really so much of a big deal anymore because, you know, even now, like just about any game character can hang off a ledge. That's just kind of an accepted thing. But I think it says a lot about Kojima's creativity that, you know, yeah, it was a big deal that you could hang from a ledge, but that fact that you could do pull-ups to strengthen your grip gauge, that's not something that has made it into all games.
I remember people joking about like Tomb Raider, Angel of Darkness, or something like that, about Lara Croft's grip gauge, but like as a, or like her, or like RPG aspects of like enhancing her physical abilities, something like that.
Oh, was there? Yeah, I didn't I didn't play Angel of Darkness, so
neither did I. So.
Yeah, but I mean, it's weird, right? That Metal Gear Solid 2 was one of the first games that included ledge dangling as a game mechanic, and it included that and the little like doing pull-ups to increase your grip gauge, and now. You know, characters hanging from ledges is kind of an accepted thing in just about all kinds of games, but nobody does the grip gauge thing. And
not a lot of people want to, like, worry about gauges anymore. Like, the most gauge you get is, like, for, like, special attacks, but then, like, they don't want to represent the health, like, or any sort of...
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's kind of neat, and I actually hadn't thought about it from that perspective until just now. And, you know, like, I really appreciate...
Sorry.
No, I just really appreciate Kojima's cleverness about that. I mean, I feel like, you know, that's kind of the... That kind of is the Kojima touch, right? Mm-hmm. Where you put a lot of... You put a lot of attention and a lot of thought into something that, you know, is comparatively a small detail. And, you know, I mean, I feel like that's what sort of defines the Kojima flavor. The fact that you can smoke a cigarette and then blow the smoke into a laser trap to see the beams, but while you're smoking, it hurts your health.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very few games do things like that. I feel like maybe because a game that did that would... I wonder if maybe it would... It would seem inconsistent with the level of detail of the like the rest of the game, and Kojima just doesn't give a fuck. You know, he'll make a game that is like completely unrealistic in like 95 different ways, and then do 5 things that are like way more realistic than they would be in any other game. And just because he fucking can, yeah. And I love that. I love the fact that he's such a ballsy motherfucker that he'll do that.
So then, E3 2001, that was, that's like I said, that was a trailer where they revealed, Solid Snake. Did they show Solid Snake, or did they, No, actually, I remember, like, one trailer, maybe, like, in a Tokyo Game Show or something, you saw, like, him in his, like, clad in his, like his cyber suit.
Yeah, and his, like, his Dr. Octopus uniform.
People were just getting like super hyped and stuff, and I guess people on the Japanese side were like, because it was coming out in America first, but then like the day of, I guess we should just get into it now, like the day of release, like Japan got this special trailer where they revealed that Raiden was the protagonist in the plant chapter.
Yeah.
And I guess like they caught on because like his voice actor, like he's very distinctive from like how Snake sounds.
Yeah.
So like they heard his voice in the previous trailer, so it's like, who's this guy? So like, oh, there we go. It's
with
the white hair.
Yeah, it's funny because you know, by contrast, I think you know most American gamers were completely unprepared for Raiden. I mean, you know, talking about Kojima being a ballsy motherfucker, that is like the ultimate ballsy move right there. You know, hey, I made this game that was really fucking awesome. and had this one character that everybody liked, and I'm going to make a second game, and I'm going to make you think that you're playing this guy that you liked, and then an hour in, no, I'm making you play somebody else, and I'm going to make you watch the guy that you wanted to play go off and be a badass somewhere else without you.
I remember, like, that was the year I did get a PS2 and ended up getting Metal Gear 2, but that was, like, for Christmas. So it was, like, the issue with the OPM issue, with the, like, that had the silver cover with, like, this, with the Shinkawa artwork of Snake from the cover of the game.
Yeah.
Had, like, that quote is, like, Solid Snake is dead, but he's also here. Either he's about to, there are two of them.
Yeah.
And then, like, they had, like, the cover story and also, like, the review that didn't, that mentioned, like, a Luke Skywalker-type character. And which compared Snake to Han Solo or something like that. Like, there was all those comparisons.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, he was trying not to, like, they didn't have, like, explicit spoilers. Like, they showed shots of, like, stuff in the plant chapter, but then, like, cleverly, like, they took the screenshots in first person so you didn't see, like, him. The only one that was there was, like, the very last, in, like, this gallery of, like, exclusive shots. And, like, at the very last one, the corner there, the bottom right-hand corner, was a shot of, like, the skull suit. From that scene where they're describing a skull suit to ride in, and he's like,
yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, huh, so who's wearing that? But then, like, I got that issue of EGM, like, those were just the holiday one, where that was the one where they blew out all the spoilers, and they were like, oh yeah, Raiden exists, and we hate the hell out of him, that's why he gets 9.5.
Yep.
And I remember that episode because, I remember that issue, because Halo was the game of the month that got 10 and 10, 10 all over the place.
Oh yeah, that's right, they did come out really close together, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't know how close. I know. I think it was November 13th for MGS2, but I don't know about Halo.
Halo was November 15th.
I think that might have been it actually. Yeah, like 2 days apart or something like that.
Wow, that's actually really funny that, like.
And also that same holiday season, yeah, Grand Theft Auto 3.
Oh damn!
Yeah, and also Devil May Cry 1.
That was a hell of a year. Holy shit!
Yeah. And Rez, holy. What?
Oh, Rez was holiday
yes.
season then, too?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, that was a really intense time.
And also funny, what'd you call it? Because I was so eager to play the game. Like, I didn't really, like, the concept of, like, spoilers was like, oh, whatever, like, the information about the game, go ahead. Like, because I remember this friend from junior high, Edward, like, E-D-V-R-D, whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, I got the game. And I was like, oh yeah? Like, he's like, oh yeah, like, Raiden. He plays this guy named Raiden. He has a sword. And Olga's the ninja. And you fight Solidus in the end. And I was like, oh, that's great. That's all awesome.
Yeah, back in the day when spoilers didn't really matter so much.
I mean, I'm not sure, like, for, like, the hardcore, like, who were on, like, BBS or whatnot, like, they were, like, totally... Like, as well as dissecting, like, all the trailers and stuff, they were also like, yo, don't spoil a lot of stuff. And, like, I was just like, again, I was, what, turning 13 that year? Or, like, or I was turning 12 that year. A 12-year-old playing an M-rated game, MGS2 of all things. I remember reading about how bloody it is. And then, like, but, yeah. So, yeah. Did you have, like, any sort of reaction to Ryan? But I was in, like, my anime phase. I was like, oh, yeah, do with a sword. Hell yeah, I'm rocking.
Okay, when I played Metal Gear Solid, I never owned an original PlayStation, and I was I remember my friend Joe had a you know, he had a PlayStation. He went out and he rented Metal Gear Solid, and we stayed up all night and beat the whole game in one sitting. You know, that was actually, you know, come to think of it, that was probably the first time that I had ever, like, sat down, you know, with a friend, beat an entire game, like, in one sitting. Like, do the, you know, that whole thing that, like, everybody kind of has fond memories of, right? That
oh,
nostalgia
yeah.
of, like, you and your buddy at, like, 3:30 in the morning, like, being like, oh my god, this fucking boss fight is, oh shit, look on the back of the box for the fucking Kodak frequency, and, like, all this other kind of, like, crazy shit. You know, and I think everybody kind of has memories like that with different games, and for me it was Metal Gear Solid. But, you know, that being said, I wasn't necessarily, like, super attached to Snake or, you know, or anything like that. I just, you know, I wanted to play You know, I wanted to play a new game. You know, I was interested in, like, you know, what new shit can I do? And, you know, I was, you know, I've always been a bit of a graphics whore, so, you know, I wanted to see, like, the new pretty imagery, and oh my god, the fucking graphics! So, you know, like, 90 minutes in, when the game pulled that switcheroo and put me in control of Raiden, you know, I certainly didn't expect it, and I was like, wait a second, I thought I was going to play as Snake. And I think maybe I thought it was like a temporary diversion, and then a couple hours later I realized, oh, so I guess I am just going to be playing Raiden the whole time. And it didn't, I mean, it didn't really bother me all that much. It was, I mean, you know, to me, it was all about, like, oh, what kind of, like, cool shit can I do to fuck with this game? And, you know, I think a lot of my, a lot of my gaming habits were very heavily influenced by the fact that, when I was really little, like, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, when I was growing up, we only had a Mac in the house. So I played mostly Mac games, which meant mostly Myst and Marathon. And, you know, Myst, of course, was loaded with Easter eggs. And Marathon was, I mean, like, you know, that was... Marathon was probably the game where Bungie kind of, like, defined their whole little, their whole philosophy of, like, you know, loading everything up with Easter eggs and being, like, really kind of deliberately coy about it, and it's awesome. So, for me, it was all about the Easter eggs. And Metal Gear Solid 2 was a fucking festival of silly bullshit.
Oh, yes.
Like, oh, hey, there's this one spot on Big Shell where, like, there's a bunch of seagulls hanging around, and if I run too fast through this area, I'll slip on their shit.
If you look up at them, oh, they'll show on your face.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, if I walk around the outer edge of Big Shell at this exact moment, like, there's a guard just, like, randomly pissing off the edge.
I might actually get the voice out. Oh, I'm going to go in my face.
Yeah.
Right?
God. I feel like it's been a long time since I've played Metal Gear Solid 2, but I feel like if I go back to it now, I'm going to realize that we were probably much more forgiving of terrible voice acting back then.
But that was like, they had like the gratuitous like Russian accents for all the Gulukovich soldiers, yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. They had like the really like kind of thick, cartoony, like fucking, like. Like, exaggerated, the Russians are coming type accent. Emergency, emergency, everybody to get from street. You know, like...
Yeah. Speaking of voices, I remember Quentin Flynn, like, the voice of Ryan in an interview, like, he was told, like, to do, like, a snake-like voice in the beginning of the plant chapter. And I was listening, I was like, whoa, this guy is not Snake. I was wondering how people who like bought the game day one and played through that far, like, it was like wondering what the hell is going on with that whiflash of
yeah.
like, Quentin Flynn's voice.
Wait a second, who the hell is this guy?
Snake, do you remember the Snake game that Tekken 2 years ago? Of course. I was like, oh man.
Have we traveled forward and backward in time at the same time? What is this? Why does he sound like a kid?
That would have been oh man. And,
you've created a time paradox!
Snake, you can't go to the future like that. I love how, I'm not sure how it is in the dub on the Japanese side, but, like, in the dub for, I guess we'll just go on the other characters, like, Colonel, like, he sounds subtly, like, because the reveal that he is the Arsenal, like, one of the Arsenal AI or something like that for the Patriots, like, sounds, like, subtly robotic. Like, compared to, like, his more natural performance in GS1. I don't know if that was intentional, but, like, that was a really, like, nice touch then. Yeah,
that's a good point. I don't know that I noticed that when I played it, but I mean, I can definitely see that being a possibility. You know, again, like back in 2001, you know, like voices in games were, you know, I mean that was kind of like an accepted thing by then. It wasn't the novelty that it was in the days of Star Fox 64. you know, like we hadn't reached a point where we were being like super critical of you know, like vocal performance and things like that. You know, like we hadn't got to the point where we are now, where, you know, we look at games like Mass Effect and Uncharted and L.A. Noire, and, you know, really try to scrutinize the actors' performances. So, I mean, I think it's entirely possible that, you know, Kojima might have had another one of these kind of strokes of quirky genius, and told, you know, what's his name, whoever's, you know, who's doing the voice of the Colonel, to kind of put a little bit of a robotic spin on the voice. And, you know, I imagine that, you know, that that might have slipped by a lot of people, and that is also, I mean, if that's the case, that's pretty fucking rad.
I haven't played the Japanese version through like more often, so I don't know about the Japanese voice, but like, but yeah, definitely Paul Lading for his dub as a Colonel for Part Two was like, that was like a great touch there. And and this is like the beginning of where like David Hayter, he started having this affected like quality to his voice, like in a. I mean, you listen to him in interviews, like, nowadays, he sounds like, his more natural voice is actually almost, like, if you add, like, a little bit of, like, an edge to it, that sounds like what his MGS1 performance was. But, like, he started to have this, like, this force, like, he started, like, the effect, like, try to, like, read the lines as a Snake character, you know?
Right. Like, as though they were, like, he were putting in a more concerted effort to deliver that performance.
This is Snake, you know, instead of like, this is Snake, or whatever. I don't know if you can hear the nuance. I'm going to cut that out so you don't hear that, me trying to do that.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, so, like, all the other characters, like, yeah, this is, yeah, Rose.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That whole, like, of course, this is funny now, because, like, this is reminding me of all of my, like, favorite eye-rolly moments.
Oh, in the game?
Yeah, just, like, I had actually, like, I guess I must have, like, blocked out Rose entirely.
Oh, man.
No. Jack, I'm pregnant. It's your baby. He just, like, freaks out. Like, oh, my God. What's going
like,
on?
That's more awesome, like, because that's the part where they cut off her communication. So it's like, Jack, I'm carrying, I'm pregnant, Jack. You're a baby.
Yeah, and it does that
Rose,
fucking,
what's
like,
going on?
It does that, like, HAL 9000, like, fucking Daisy thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God.
So, yeah, man, that's actually, yeah.
I mean, it does.
I'm an idiot because I never saw 2001, so, but that's actually, like, that probably was a very deliberate connection, like, how the distortion, like, flows like that, yeah.
I do think as goofy as all of that stuff ended up being, I guess this is also kind of a Kojima thing, right? Kojima is trying to, it's actually kind of difficult to put this into words now, but like when it comes to his fiction, Kojima gets very, very involved, and you know, I feel like there are probably a lot of things in the MGS games that, I mean, you know, there are many things that are just like blatantly silly, right? Things like you know, like, fucking, like, Metal Gear Solid 4, what's-his-face, Drebin, having, like, a little fucking bald monkey wearing a diaper, like, following him everywhere, dude, like, has this, like, obsession with Hebrew Coca-Cola. Like, alright, fine, whatever. This is Kojima being, like, silly and ridiculous. You know, or what's his face? One of the mercenaries who works with Meryl having a mohawk shaved in the shape of an exclamation point, like.
Oh, Jonathan.
Yeah, like, you know, things like that. Like, okay, you know, that's like Kojima goofiness. But then you get the impression that there are some things that Kojima's doing that, if you just kind of look at them, you know, in the context of a video game, you know, they're just more goofy shit. It's just, you know, the same kind of silliness as, you know, as any of the other jokes that he throws into the games. But, like, sometimes, like, he treats them with enough seriousness that, you know, it seems as though he's kind of expecting you to suspend disbelief. Like, you know, for instance, the Colonel bugging out and saying a bunch of ridiculous shit. You know, like, you look at that in the context of just, oh yeah, I'm looking at this game and it's doing this, it's having this, like, weird little dialogue moment. In that sense, it's funny that the Colonel is just spouting some random words and says, oh yeah, is it some goofy Kojima shit? But were you to suspend disbelief and actually imagine yourself in that scenario, that would not be funny. That would be fucking terrifying. Like, the surrealness of it would be pretty disconcerting. You know, and the same thing with, like, Rose and her fucking, like, telling Jack that she's pregnant with his baby while her voice is slowing down and glitching out, like, obviously showing that she's a fucking computer program. You know, you look at that outside the context of the game, and you're like, what the fuck is this goofy shit, Kojima? Holy shit. But, you know, were you to suspend your disbelief, were you to imagine that actually happening to you in reality, that would not be funny. That would be really fucking scary. A computer is telling you that it's carrying your baby while it's, like, fucking shutting down and succumbing to a ridiculous virus. You know, and I feel like that in itself is kind of a Kojima thing, that, you know, there isn't just one kind of goofy Kojima shit. There's the stuff that's meant to be silly, and there's the stuff that's meant to be surreal. You know, that can be interpreted as silly if you're not taking it seriously. But if you were to put yourself in the character's shoes, so to speak, would definitely be much darker than it appears at first.
Oh yeah, and that's the point, like, specifically at that point in the story where Raiden is like deep into arsenal gear, and the point where the game, like, identifies it as, like, the guts or something like that, and you're slowly, like, getting as you play through the game, play through that area and advance forward, it sounds like you're getting, like, shat, like, they're just in the shat out of arsenal gear.
Yeah,
like rectum and sternum or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's like a lot of, there are a lot of kind of weird biological references, with regard to arsenal gear, you know, that you're like, you know, as though you're kind of burrowing into this living creature, which, you know, is like, I mean, that is the whole idea of living machines does kind of come up a lot in Metal Gear, you know, partly because the Metal Gears themselves are often animated like living creatures. We're talking about, like, a machine that roars, you know, which is, you know, kind of a disturbing thing all on its own. You know, so the idea of arsenal gear being a living thing is just, you know, it's in keeping with that.
We're talking about Arsenal Gear as if that was, like, the main Metal Gear, but then there's also, like, Metal Gear Raid, the one that they advertised all this time.
Yeah.
Like, and, like, that's the, like, speaking of, like, making, like, machines that seem, like, organic and, like, lifelike, like, Rex was very angular, and, like, he, you know, he was, as much as he was, like, named after Metal Gear, and like a T-Rex, he was very, like, rectangular and stuff in his design. But then Metal Gear Raid is, like, a lot of curves. He's actually, like, This is, I think it's around the same time that Shinkawa was designing the Zone to the Ender mix, so he has some of those aspects.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of similarities between Metal Gear Ray and the orbital frames in Zone of the Enders.
Yeah, and then it had that weapon where it would, like, actually take in water and like shoot it out as like a powerful laser.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually cut through metal, and that's what like caused most of the ship to like list even more like in the tanker chapter.
Yeah, exactly. That huge like water cutting tool. And
the most significant thing was that actually shooting it through the knees and like the mouth, like it actually bled.
Yeah.
Like it had like, they may explain it as some sort of like nano paste or something like that. That like, I don't know, I forgot how they explained it, but yeah, it was like, and it was so like, it was also like, made it much more epic when Solid is like, he takes out like the ramp, like the
rain, yeah,
going rampant.
I think some of it was that the, because you know, there are a couple of moments where the camera kind of gets in really close to the mechanisms of the Metal Gears, and you know, it seems as though most of the actuation is with these kind of like artificial hydraulic muscles that, you know, I mean, if you were to slice through them, they would start, you know, like spraying pressurized oil all over the place. And, you know, I mean, that all of those things kind of conspire to put the Metal Gears in this weird sort of uncomfortable gray area between machine and monster, basically.
Hmm.
You know, the Metal Gear Ray, you know, like standing / swimming above the wreckage of the tanker at the end of the tanker chapter, like swishing its tail back and forth, and you know, and making this very strange semi-mechanical sort of biological sounding shriek. You know, that's like, you know, I mean, that's in keeping with that, you know, with that whole theme of you know, these like man-made monsters. I mean, if you were to stretch the metaphor to the breaking point, it would also cover the snakes themselves, you know, les enfants terribles and all that shit. I mean, you know, ultimately, when you apply that to Arsenal Gear, and the fact that now we're dealing with a machine that is big enough, you know, that is, you know, it's a vessel, it's a floating city, it's something that you can get inside of. This idea that you're invading the body of this machine, that the computer virus that you're infecting it with is also kind of literally a virus, metaphorically speaking. Wow, it is metaphorically literally a virus. And
so
in context, it actually made sense to say it that way. I think I have officially disappeared up my own ass.
Just like Raiden went up in the Arsenal Gears anyway.
Ba-boom! Alright. Anyway.
Watch out for Nikki cartwheeling people in your stomach anyway.
Yes, exactly.
I wonder, like, I remember, like, I think in normal mode, you actually, because, what do you call it, like, that fight with the rays at the end, it's a gauntlet, you actually fight the whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
And like the, and then like in the normal mode, I think you actually take down like 5 Metal Gear Rays and that's it. But like the significance is that they name each of them, like, give them code names, like A0, A01E and stuff. And they're like, I wonder how people were thinking when like the fifth one, like its name is A05E, and like, it almost looks like it's spelled out as like Rose, like Ray Rose, and it's like, well, what's going on?
That's right. I remember that. Yeah, there's a lot of like kind of weird, kind of, you know, again, this sort of weird surreal shit that when looked at as a piece of entertainment is just kind of silly, but when taken seriously, like in the context of its fiction, is like really fucking surreal and terrifying.
I guess the TV shows are called like fridge horror.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the there's. You know, now that I think about it, it sort of gives me reason to think that that Kojima must have been a fan of David Lynch, because
probably, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, there's a very particular kind of horror, which I appreciate very much, but is very difficult to describe, which is something like that. Like, you're fighting a bunch of Metal Gears, and then the last one that you fight has a serial number that just happens to bear a striking resemblance to the name Rose. You know, it's not necessarily... You know, the game isn't necessarily implying that, like, Rose is a Metal Gear or something, or that the computer program that was once Rose is controlling this Metal Gear. It's not, you know, it's not meant to be anything, like, very specific like that, but it's the kind of horror that you get when the laws of reality break down, when things kind of lose their, when things lose their predictability, you know. And, you know, and that's exactly what happens there, that the game is simply taking this character that you were supposed to have cared about, or at least you would if she weren't so fucking annoying, has, you know, taken this character that you were supposed to have cared about and deliberately juxtaposed her with this giant fucking machine that's trying to kill you. And it's not establishing that there's a relationship. It's just making you really uncomfortable by putting those concepts really close together. You know, which is in keeping with, you know, the whole premise of, like, of, you know, reality breaking down at the end of the game because the simulation is falling apart. Yeah, and, like, it's... I don't know, it's really funny, actually, because, like, you know... An hour ago, if you were to ask me about my memory of Metal Gear Solid 2, I would tell you that it was like a bunch of kind of silly shit that was mostly a practical joke that Kojima was playing on his own fans. And oh, I yeah, still, like, and to an extent, I do still believe that, but now that I've been rambling about it like a... like the ultimate video game hipster over here, now I want to fucking play it again. God damn it!
Oh, you're welcome. I don't think I need to replay it anymore, because I remember, like I mentioned, like, MGS2 was Metal Gear for me, like, seriously, like, ever, like, since that time I got it, that December of 2001, like, I played that game over and over. I got all the dog tags, and, like, I listened to every single coded conversation I could get possible from Rose, like, every area I would, like, save, like, okay, Rose, let's chat.
Yeah.
I was just, like, after every juncture, I would, like, call everyone, like, ask them, and then, like, I would get every single weapon description from Plissken.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I love, like, there's a lot of stuff that, like that was, in the Rose conversations that do, like, foreshadow, like, the reveal where, like, she's actually, like, a Patriot spy, like, the whole conversation about, like, online identities and, like, how, like, you don't really know all the people you know online and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, she gets really, like, uncomfortable, like, talking to Jack, talking to Ryan about this, and he's like, oh, yeah, like, that's how it goes. And I remember, like, also goofing around with, like, the mechanics. Like, I realized that, yeah, like, I was like, oh, yeah, why don't I just shoot off both this guy's, like, both of his hands, like, so he can't use a gun at all. And he instantly dies. And I was like, oh, yeah, shoot both of his legs. He can't walk anymore. He instantly dies. I was like, huh. I was wondering, like, how, maybe that's because, like, they didn't, like, make a reaction, like, how the game would, like, it just didn't, like,
yeah, well, I imagine the AI probably didn't have a state to handle that.
Or maybe, like, they were just thought, like, oh, yeah, most reasonable response is that he's going to be, like, completely incapacitated, so he'll just, like, fall over and kill over and die.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think also that is, you know, like, purely from a functional standpoint, when it comes to, like, from the perspective of game design, if, you know, like, you have this character, if you shot him in both legs, then he can't move, or if you shot him in both hands and he can't shoot... In either of those circumstances, he is no longer able to affect you, at which point, why bother wasting memory and processing time on this character when he's technically not part of the simulation, so just kill him.
And it's a lovely anime, she just keels over, basically, like, just, like, or he instantly just falls on his back, like,
yeah.
I was like, huh. God, I tested the hell out of that game. I remember, like, eventually getting the infinite ammo wig that gives Ryan brown hair.
Oh, jeez.
Which is also hilarious because at some point he talks to Emma, like Omicron's sister. He's like, yeah, this is my real hair, okay? And like, you have all these ways you can wear it. Like, the orange one gives an infinite grip, and the blue one, when you get all dog tags, makes it like he can breathe like underwater like forever. He has like a maximum oxygen chamber for the whole.
Oh wow. Man, I didn't even know about any of those things.
I remember like that was just good. That was great stuff, like holding people up, and then like using the infinite ammo wig, just like unloading like bullets after bullet in the enemy, seeing how much you can kick the floor in blood and stuff, and I was like, which made it funnier, but I played Substance, I was like, where's all the blood? I guess European release they toned it down, so make it. I remember for the scene part, like when Vamp, like he slices the final like SEAL member in that one room, after he kills the three of them, like he slashes the three of them.
Yeah.
But the last one, he like just slices them like through the throat, and like the jet of blood, like in the U.S. version, like it's so like so over the top that it actually like goes all the way up to the ceiling, and then like it actually drops coming from the ceiling at that point when he like starts walking away.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, you know, the only version that I played was just the, like, you know, the straight-up, like, American version. Yeah.
I mean, like, in Substance, I think that was the, because they had European exchange, they just worked off the European build, I think, is how that difference came
about. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now I'm remembering when Substance was announced for the original Xbox. God, that was a weird fucking announcement. I remember thinking how surreal that was.
When I saw the trailer for it, it was announced for PC and PS2 as well, so that was like... I knew that Xbox was getting it first, though. I knew that.
Yeah, that's right. It did come out to the Xbox first, and then it was eventually released also for the PS2 and the PC.
On the back of the box for Substance for PS2, exclusive skateboarding mode. It's Evolution Skateboarding demo.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it was Evolution Skateboarding with a ride-in model on like this weird little like kind of jury-rigged big shell skate park.
You could choose Snake or ride-in. Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking video games.
I love how they took all the lines like from the game and like, rearranged them like and just made it like sound like all fun all over again. Like in the trailer, I didn't make it like it wasn't like a secret theater sort of thing. Like it was all like serious, like in the context of the story. But then like also arranged around like the concept of like re-releasing a game and like having less extra stuff in there.
Oh jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Oh man, I remember going into the theater mode and swapping all of the swapping the character models in the cutscenes.
Oh my god! I wish they had like a maybe put out a second disc like Subsistence had, so they could have all the cutscenes and do it for all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh god. Yeah, I actually have, I have that limited, what was it, like the super limited edition of MGS3 Subsistence that had the three discs.
And the third disc was like a baby.
The third disc was just a movie.
It was like MGS3 cut into a movie with like footage, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that was
being good at another time, but yeah, that thing just like pisses me off on a couple of levels. But yeah,
yeah, that was. I mean, even then, right? The existence of MGS2 Substance, the idea of a game having a director's cut,
yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think now. Before MGS2 Substance, was there ever a like director's cut version of a game ever released? That must have been the first one.
Well, technically, in Japan, Metal Gear Solid Integral, which was the U.S. dub.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Okay. Metal Gear Integral
as the third disc, which we got separately as VR missions here because we already had the English voices.
Right.
That would have been a hilarious juxtaposition, though, if we got like the Japanese edition voices.
Oh God.
What do you want to play some?
Metal Gear.
Metal Gear.
Yeah, I guess. I mean that is, you know, I mean, I guess it's not too surprising that Kojima would be the one to pioneer that, considering that you know, pre Konami, he had ambitions of being a film director. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he would be the first game developer to kind of bring that film director mentality to games, of saying, well, you know, this is the version of the game that that we actually released to market, but no, here's my definitive version.
Oh, you my
know,
God.
Here's
See
what I actually meant.
Speaking of things like that Kojima does that are like movie based, and like, I mean, he talks about, like, you see in his bio, he's always like, 70% of me is movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then like freaking, like, has anyone else made a made something, a release, like the documentary Metal Gear Solid 2?
Oh, Jesus.
Tell me you have that.
I actually don't. I think I did at one point or another.
Oh, yeah.
But,
that thing had, like, every 3D model of every character. You could, like, adjust the lighting and, like, see how it looked and stuff. Like, every permutation. They had the entire script in there. Like, shots of the original game plan and document, like, the game, like, pitch. Like,
yeah,
in
that's
like, the
right.
Japanese one.
Man, that was fucking wild.
They had all the cutscenes in there. No audio, but still.
Man, like, no game developer would have had the balls to do that before Kojima. I mean, once again, Kojima being a ballsy motherfucker.
And, like, he was allowed to do that because, like, MGS2 was such a big hit, like, released, like, such a big seller, like, and, like, it was like, oh, yeah, this is a massive, like, blockbuster game that's like a movie, and he's like, this is everything about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I mean, I guess, you know, you could almost say that, you know, he did kind of, you know, he did in a way kind of bring the, you know, the existence of, like, making of content to a completely new level, you know? I mean, you know, it existed before, you know, you could look into the making of a game, but I think never before that had it been so publicized, had it been so high profile, you know? You know, I feel as though things like the document of Metal Gear Solid 2 and, you know, like a lot of the things that Kojima did in as part of his, you know, sort of creative process and as part of kind of revealing that process to the world, I mean, laid the groundwork for, you know, even now, video game special editions that come with making of content, or, you know, Half-Life 2 having a commentary mode, you know, all of these things, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like these things might owe a lot to Kojima, because I don't know of anybody doing something like that before he did it.
Remember a lot of great things in that document release, like, besides it having, like, a sampling of Substance's VR missions, which is, like, I guess, like, another, like, a playable incentive to play to buy that, really.
Yeah.
I got it, like much later, like, a couple of years after MGS 2 came out and that thing, so I was, like, I think it was, like, probably $5 used off EV.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I was like, oh man, document armor. I had this, like, thing in my binder that was, like, talking about it. I should get that, yeah. And this was, like, this is around the time that I was, like, I actually read the entire script in the game.
Whoa.
Top to bottom. from document. And that was interesting. They had, like, you know, they would have things that they say, like, oh yeah, like, this is, like, yeah, Patriots, the original GWAI is destroyed. This is JFK at the end is talking to Raiden. And things like, they had some lines cut out, like, because remember there's that sequence where suddenly you're on top of Federal Hall, like, falling on top of Federal Hall, but then they didn't show that sequence where, like, Arsenal crashes into Manhattan because of 9/11 being so close.
Right,
there's
right.
The line where Liquid, so, like, obviously, like, so villainous, he's like, oh yeah, I'm making a disaster, it sounds great, doesn't it? Something like that. No, it's like, but you're going to cause a disaster if you crash Arsenal gear. It's like, disaster, I like the sound of that.
Jesus.
Let me read that again in his accent. Disaster! I like the sound of that! Or something like that. Man, Cam Clark, that was the last use of Cam Clark as Liquid. God damn it.
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, remember in MGS4, Pat Zimmerman also is Ocelot. Like, they didn't have, like, his voice. Didn't have Cam Clark as Liquid. So people were like, what's going on? Why is Ocelot singing?
Oh. Oh, yeah, I guess I never noticed that.
Really? In MGS2? I mean, MGS4. Like, that is Ocelot's voice.
I think maybe by the time MGS4 had come out, I had probably, I mean, because, you know, I only played MGS2 once.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, by the time MGS4 had come out, my memory of it wasn't as fresh. That and, you know, again, I mean, we can go into this later, but, you know, by the time MGS4 came out, my memory of the first two Metal Gear Solid games had been completely obliterated by the fucking masterpiece that was Snake Eater.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we can go into that another time.
I remember a lot of the. I remember like doing a lot of like. Remember I told you about like killing the inadvertently killing like Gugubish soldiers by testing like how far I could go with like disabling their limbs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at one point, I had infinite ammo wig on Raiden, and I was like, okay, if I'm standing in this is in the center of the battlefield here, I'm just gonna like equip the stinger and shoot him over and over and over. And it's like there's the point where I would not like go like proceed like with the game until I had like. Cut the frame rate down to like less than like 10 frames or something like that, and just kept mashing square, and I was just like trying to see if I could like kill him, like just in that spot, just shooting stingers over and over, and I was like, this frame rate is like, so freaking low. Oh my god! And that was like the first game I ever played that was like 60 frames, like for a lot of the time. I was like, whoa, this looks great.
That's true, actually. I think before MGS2, well, you know, I think the PS2. I mean, just as a piece of hardware, I think maybe because partly because I guess its architecture and the sort of tools that Sony supplied had a lot in common with arcade titles, and the fact that you know a lot of the launch titles for the PS2 were kind of arcadey, you know, just for the sake of development time. That, you know, the PS2 was kind of the first console that brought that 60 FPS arcade experience, you know, to a home TV. I mean, I don't remember what game it was, but I do know that the first game that I ever played that ran at 60 frames per second was on the PS2. And seeing that in Metal Gear was like, holy shit, like everything looked so, you know, everything looked so much, you know, so much smoother and so much more convincing. And even though it had that kind of 60 frames a second, high frame rate kind of home video look to it, you know, that didn't matter. The smoothness was still just mind blowing to me.
I remember, like, before we move on, I guess, like to close out with the talk about the backlash, I guess like I remember like one big thing that I was always reading the OPM articles and stuff, and like they were always emphasizing that you don't have to kill anybody, like you can tranquilize people, like you have the M9 now, you can just like tranquilize like soldiers, like just go through, you don't have to like have a single kill to your record, and like in part one, like you couldn't, like it's hard to do that, you just like melee and like they would knock out for a few moments, and then in this one, like you have a sniper, like, have, like, a tranquilizer version of the PSG-1 for some reason. You have, like, you can flip your sword the other way to hit with the blunt edge, so you don't actually kill, like, dismember anybody. Not that you actually did that, but you don't have to, like, cut them open. And, like, yeah there's all sorts of, I always wonder, like, maybe if Kojima wanted to have, like, a, because remember, like, in MGS1, like, Liquid was like, you enjoy all the killing, that's why, or something. Like, that's why you're like, always coming back to the missions and playing these, and, like, in the meta level, playing these games, these action games, over and over again. But then, like, in this one, like, talking about, like, simulating the MGS1, like the whole Shadow Moses incident, but then, like, I'm trying to ask people left and right, like, I'm playing a different character. Maybe it was, like, I wonder if there was ever, like, an intention to be, like, you're departing from the simulation, like, start killing dudes, and you're like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, I wonder if you ever had that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, that would be... I mean, there's always been, you know, there's always been this kind of... I mean, I guess it's a problem. I don't know. It's, or maybe it's just a reality of games, that you know you tend to have these protagonists who are, I guess, fairly accepting of the instructions that they're being given, and it's very rare to see a game in which the player character like actively refuses. You know, to follow the game's instructions. And, Yeah, I mean, I you know, it's really hard to kind of get away with that because I personally have kind of put a lot of thought into how you would actually work that into a design and have it feel consistent. But yeah, I mean, I do imagine that must have been something that that Kojima must at least have been aware of if he wasn't like actively trying to do something like that.
It carries on with like the future like installments of the series. Like in MGS3, like you, I think one of the requirements to get like top ranks is again like not killing anybody. If like to the point where you're like using just the Mark 22 to take down the Cobra unit and stuff is like really hard.
Yeah.
Like fighting the Fury like with just like CQC and stuff. And then like in MGS4 where you get the Drebin points at the end of every act and like you get like, I think like you get like zero if you kill a single person or something like that. Like for that act.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, like, tranquilizing it, and me and MGS4 will always get you, like, the highest resale value for a weapon if you pick it up.
Mm.
Or more like knocking them out, like, the CQC or, like, tranquilizing, yeah. And then with the... And then MGS2 again, well, I was going to say something about that again. What was it? Damn it. Forgot. Shit.
The tranquilizer darts, the CQC, the...
No, the funny thing, and yeah, like, I talk about experimenting MGS2, like, the fight with Solidus, I managed, like, I remember, like, I got so frustrated at one point, because I was playing Extreme, I think, Extreme mode, like, trying to fight Solidus, and then I just, like, I did, like, a cartwheel, and then, like, when he was, like, when he does, like, his, like, Back to the Future, like, rocket streams around, he's, like, die, and he's, like, about to hit you, and his cartwheel into him, and he just, like, freaking, like, you can actually cartwheel into him, and like, that counts as, like, a stun move. It hits, like, his stun gauge, and then he just, like freaking sprawls over the ground.
Really?
Yeah, he's like, boom, dog! And in the game code, there's actually a sound clip for him, like, falling off the Federal Hall and dying, but, of course, he can't do that, but yeah.
Huh.
But then I remember, like, I would test myself, just, like, fight only by cartwheeling into him.
Jeez. That is... That must have been fun to watch.
Die. And it's great, like, because at the very last hit you, like, it fades into white, so it's like a snatch out of me, like, cartwheeling in the air, like, him getting, like, smacked.
Oh, jeez.
And then, like, doing goofy stuff, like, I remember, like, in the cutscene, because it's, like, basically uses, like, elements of your, in-game model, it's, like, it's not pre-rendered, so then, like, I would have scenes where, like, Raiden is shooting a SOCOM, but instead I equip the M9, so suddenly he's shooting, like, lethal bullets from his M9.
Oh.
Or, like, he has the silencer on his SOCOM, but he's still, like, you still hear, like, actual sound gun sound effects.
Mm.
And then, like, reflecting this game model again, you can equip, like, the wig, and he would have blue hair when he kills Solidus, so, like, have, like, the Gulukovich outfit, or, like, body armor, and stuff like that.
Yeah. I kind of like the fact that Kojima seems to be okay with letting people break his games.
Yeah.
You know, as long as they have had the authoritative experience at least once, you know, then after that, whatever, all bets are off. Fuck around, do whatever you want.
Like, I remember, like, and in the European version, you just, like, play a new game plus, basically, like, sit over with, like, the, and then, like, Snake's wearing shades, and so is Raiden.
Like, hey, why not? wearing sunglasses. I'm a badass.
Yeah. Stuff's happening, and sure, this is a great game. Why is everyone getting mad about it? I was wondering if like the whole backlash about it, and then like yeah, just like basically, and then you weren't so attached about it either, right? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I didn't have this kind of like intense attachment to Solid Snake or to the experience that I knew. I think, you know, because like, you know, I'm always looking for new cool shit, and B, the game was just so fucking pretty for the time that that definitely eliminated whatever small frustration I might otherwise have felt. But I mean, even then, I don't think I would have been. I mean, you know, that kind of goes back to that, you know, that same theory that I've always had, and that you know, that like my theory that was like somewhat validated when Tim Rogers said basically the same thing in his Action Button review of MGS4. That, you know, Metal Gear Solid 1 comes out, and it's fucking awesome, and everybody loves it. And then Kojima announces that he's working on Metal Gear Solid 2, and all of the fans of the first one want more of the same. They want more Snake, and want more Shadow Moses. They want basically the same game again, but with prettier graphics. And Kojima, being the sort of weird, quirky guy that he is, in my mind, I imagine him kind of resenting all of this pressure and deciding, okay, you want the same game all over again? Fine, fuck you. I'm going to give you the same game all over again, except I'm going to make you play as somebody else who isn't half as badass as the one that you wanted to play, and I'm going to make you watch the badass that you wanted to play from a distance while he kicks a ton of ass without you. And, you know, like, I'm sure that it wasn't as, you know, as extreme as I'm making it sound. But, you know, I do feel as though a lot of the sort of more conscious and more overt changes to the formula were, you know, definitely weren't done with the intent to please the fans. It was done at the very least with a disregard to all of the people who wanted more of the same, if not just like direct, open defiance of them. I mean, you know, I think that has a lot to do with why the whole premise for Metal Gear Solid 2 is a simulated reenactment of Metal Gear Solid 1.
And Raiden is very much, it's sort of like there's that trope on TV tropes, like, this loser is you. Like, not to say, like, Raiden is, like, such a, like, it's, like, that terrible, like, I didn't really mind him either side of it. But then, like, he's always like, yeah, I read In the Darkness of Shadow Moses, like, Colonel, you were with Snake, why are you, like, not one of, yeah, and then he's like, oh, Snake, you're a legend, I need to talk to you about this stuff, and then, like, yeah, so there's all that element of it there.
Yeah, the fact that...
And then he gets pissed off that Snake calls him a weak, simple-minded, stubborn fool.
Yeah. No, that's almost a... I kind of wonder if maybe that's, like, a jab at... a jab at, like, overly conservative fans who just wanted the same game.
This is, like, a game. Like, seriously, like whenever there's always, like, the top 10, like, list of your top games, like, Metal Gear's always, like, if not number one, always, like, within the top 3 for me. Like, that's, like again, like I said, like I mentioned, like, beat every difficulty, got all the dog tags... And, like, I read the damn script top to bottom just to find some, like, kernel brilliance and stuff. And that was, like, like that, to that point where that was where I erupted into that MGS fan thing, you know?
Right.
And then,
yeah,
like, all that came tumbling down when MGS 4 hit, but we're not getting into that now. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's gonna be an interesting discussion. but yeah, I mean, I've always liked Metal Gear Solid 2. I never felt really strongly about it. I was never, like, you know, hugely emotionally invested in it. But I have always enjoyed it, and I've always appreciated it as this very representative part of Kojima's of his work. You know, I think, you know, I don't think it's his best. You know, I would I would see Metal Gear Solid 3 as being his best. Mm-hmm. It's definitely MGS3 is one of my favorite games of all time. But I think Metal Gear Solid 2 is a very Kojima game. In its presentation, in its story, just like in its content, and even in its relationship to the other games in the series. You know, that it's like, it's the quirky one. It's the black sheep. And Kojima kind of has a thing for a black sheep. He has a thing for quirky shit that doesn't quite fit. You know, he's 90% movies. And 70%. His games, huh?
70%.
Oh, 70%, 70%, sorry. I guess, yeah. You know, I guess maybe that's a better percentage, right?
Yeah.
Kojima himself is 70% movies. And his games are 70% movies. And the 30% that is not a movie, the 30% that is a game, is always very rebellious, you know? I mean, it's as though he's got this game that is 70% movie, and the 30% game is rebelling against the other 70%. And MGS2 is the place where that happens with... I guess it's the place where that's the most obvious. And, you know, you could almost say if you were to look at the Metal Gear series, you know, you could say that MGS2 itself, like within the context of the rest of the series, is the one game that's going, "Hey, fuck you!" You know, and it's this very flamboyant kind of flag waving, like, "Hey, fuck you, assholes! This is bullshit." And you know, and I appreciate it just for that ballsy attitude.
I wonder, like, what goes through his mind whenever, like, there's like a game signing and people bring him up copies of MGS2. Like, to sign and be like, yeah. I would have to, like, write a whole damn essay in Japanese for him to read, be like, yeah, and, like, this is, like, reason A through Z through AA through ZZ of why this game is the freaking, like, the 70% of me.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I don't know. This may not be the case. It seems this way to me from, you know, not necessarily following Kojima's career very closely. But he strikes me as the kind of creator who is content to let his work do all the talking. You know, like, I imagine him being the kind of guy who, where if you ask him, like, "Hey, you know, what did you mean by this?" he would just go, "What do you think it means?" I just kind of leave it at that, you know?
But then there's, like, MGS3, where people, or MGS4, people would see, like, that was way too much explanation or something. But then maybe that's just that was, like, the load that those games had to deal with, like, in their intent. Or
yeah, well, I mean, I feel like also... I mean, again, you know, we can get into a lot of detail on MGS4, but I do feel like MGS4 MGS4 consisted of a lot of very self-conscious pandering. And I feel like that's why all of that superfluous explanation was in there. You know, and it's a shame that it had to kind of come to that.
So, MGS2 is being remade in HD.
It is!
Yeah, and,
along with MGS3 and Peace Walker.
Yeah, and funny enough, so is Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, which is also funny, because that was the game that Sis bought, like, with the PS2, and when they got it for her birthday, and I was like, "Why didn't you get MGS2?" But hey, Ico was amazing in its own right.
Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, both.
We'll have to talk about them eventually.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm actually really looking forward to the HD re-releases just so I can play Shadow of the Colossus at a more consistent frame rate.
Yes. I'm gonna see an MGS2 in HD if I can, like, I'm gonna go back to that fight with Vamp and be like, oh yeah, see this wake, see these stingers, I'm coming for you. Coming for your frame rate.
You're like, yeah, let's see you slow down to 10 FPS now, bitch.
Yeah, let's go. It's really scary too, because for an HD remake, because this is like, this is not an emulation. I mean, obviously they would never do that. It's like, we're doing like all the assets in HD all over again. There were screenshots of like people that said like they did it in a 2.4:1 resolution or whatever, like the really narrow cinematic way at the bars at the top and bottom, you know.
Yeah, yeah, the like the extreme letterboxing, like the CinemaScope kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and people were saying like, whoa, this is like, and obviously like it's still centered in like where it should be, but then like what's with all this like. Why were they doing it like that for the cutscenes? And the bigger worry is that like they would take out like the old tappy like rearranged theme song for MGS.
Oh.
Either the intros or like the really remember in like in MGS3 like the denouement where like they talk where like the boss is debriefing and like that swell of the main theme song, like while it flashes back through like her life in the mission. And like how are they gonna like reconcile that like. Could they actually, like, conceivably, like, get rid of that musical asset, you know?
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a good question, you know? When you're in the, you know, when you're in the world of, like, the remake or the reboot, you know, how much can you fix before it stops being the thing that it once was? Which is, God, that was a ridiculous question to ask. But I mean, like, you know, regardless, this challenge of taking a game in its original form and, I mean, yeah, okay, remastering, like, you know, you do it in HD. I mean, like, I remember hearing this in an interview that Frank O'Connor gave yesterday about,
Halo
Anniversary.
Right?
Where he was saying that, you know, they didn't dare change the gameplay. And in fact, the really weird thing about Halo Anniversary is the fact that what they're doing is they're actually having the original untouched game running in the background, and then they have a second game engine that's running on top of it. That's actually getting all of the like all of the location data out of the original game engine, and then using
Whoa.
That to render the new shit.
That is, wow.
Which is why they made a really big deal out of the fact that while you're playing the game, if you hit the back button, you can toggle in real time between the old graphics and the new ones.
That is rock.
Because
and roll.
The old game is actually running in the background underneath all that shit.
That is so awesome.
And like that. That's a really fucking awesome idea. And you know, the idea of going into the old Metal Gear games, and you know, do you go in and fix shit, or do you leave in the stuff that didn't quite work because that's part of the personality of the game? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there is a right answer to that question.
People talked about like that cut sequence. Like there is in document. There is that model, that 3D model of like Arsenal Gear in. I think this is like supposed to be a skyline view sort of Manhattan, like but like wrecked, utterly wrecked from Arsenal Gear coming in.
Right.
And then people were like, oh, will they actually like finally create like finish that cutscene? Like, you know, it's been like how many years since 9/11? Like 10 years, like, will they actually do it? Then I was like,
Probably not. I don't imagine that they would do that. But I mean, if they do, it'll be pretty interesting to see.
Yeah. I wonder how much, like, because I think it is like Blue Point, the guys who did the God of War collection, the 1 and 2 remastering. I wonder how much Kojima is involved, like, you know, like in terms of working with them. Like, he's working on the whole Fox Engine thing and stuff. Apparently, Peace Walker is actually going to require work because it's, you know, it's a PSP game.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like, you know, I mean, I think all of them are going to take a lot of I mean, they're all going to take a lot of redoing. They're all going to have their engines rewritten, but it'll be a very interesting thing to see, nonetheless.
Yeah, I look forward to the trophy that says "Get all the dog tags."
Yeah.
So do that. Oh man, they should totally like do a redo of the, because it was like people would send in like their details and be like, "Yo, can I be in the game?" Like it was like a lottery, you know, to get your details in as a dog tag. Which they should so do that again.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like if they do it again with like a new set of names on the dog tags.
Yeah.
That would
so rock.
They should do that.
Like instead of all these art contests on like Facebook or whatever, come on.
Yeah.
Get all the fans on your Facebook page. You're like, yeah, okay, we got your. Okay, yeah, there's just a good idea of using Facebook. Like, call the data that you already took from us.
Yeah, there you go. Just get it all off the fan page.
I guess we'll close out by trying to recite like favorite lines from memory. I don't know if you can actually do it though, but we'll see.
Oh God, favorite line from memory.
Lines. I'm gonna go like ballistic here.
Oh God, scissors. Yeah, I'm just remembering Colonel bugging out and saying no. I'm sorry. It's gotta be Colonel. This is Ryden. I've got Emmerich here. We've managed to avoid drowning.
I love how he says it too. This is like, we've managed to avoid drowning.
Like, good work. Basically like,
good work, Ryden.
That's definitely my favorite.
Got your feet wet. These are the basic controls for swimming.
Yeah.
You're a man? Hmm. Well, who are you anyway?
Fuck oh, God.
Sir.
fucking Kojima.
No, my suit. I have nothing to wear to the party. The party's over for you. What do you think?
Oh God, fucking fat man.
What did you just do? What is this? I have beautiful hands. These hands are great. Such works of art. Like he rolls in and he has like a little glass with wine in it. With a straw.
Oh, God.
He doesn't even, like, reach him. He has to tip
right.
over the glass.
Yeah, a glass of wine with a straw. What the fuck was that shit?
He rolls in on the roller skates.
Oh, God.
Life is short. Oh, my God.
Oh, Metal Gear.
Damn the Patriots. Oh, good stuff. This is basically me just, like, waking out, yeah. I shouldn't be keeping AJ waiting, as it were.
Oh no! It's quite all right. I can just switch gears immediately.
What else is there? God damn it! I know there's lots of other ones. I remember there's a codex sequence where you talk about it being in the body disguise uniform, and it's like almost like a size too short for you. It's like it's the way they rationalize like how if you knock into an enemy, like it'll just come off do quit by accident. And then Colonel goes, it's probably a better fit for Rose here than you. And it's like, what? Colonel? It's like, I was like, just go on with the mission. And Rose is like, that was inappropriate. Remember that goofy stuff? Like, they had, like, Maxim posters of models all over the place, like Maxim covers.
Yeah. Or, like, what was it? There was one of the fights inside Arsenal Gear when the,
The radar would just blip into like the like a random like gravity model from Japan or something like that.
Yeah, or you know, or even like the game with like it would go to a game over screen.
Fission mailed.
The fission mailed, and you were still playing. What the?
I love that they show that in one of the cutscenes, like towards the end, and then see Raiden actually die, and then it goes into a game over screen inside the picture in picture.
Yeah.
How do they do that? I don't know. That is like so rocky.
There's a lot of really clever shit that they pull to be just like programming tricks like that. Pretty wild stuff.
You can hold down L1 when you have the blade equipped to deflect bullets. You can actually like as you're running up to a person shooting at you, you can actually like just swipe the sword and deflect them that way too.
Really?
Yeah. I did that. I was like,
swing!
Yes! Yeah. Oh yeah, and also if you have the blood edge, even and obviously if you do like the press R3 to stab, you still kill them because you just stabbed them.
Wow.
There's no blood static. I'm sorry.
You're like, nope.
I was like, oh, sorry about that. Reload.
Oh wait, my bad. That was not. No, I didn't mean to do that. Sorry.
Everyone always quotes like the scissors Colonel call, but then I always remember like the ones he doesn't do, like the other ones that he does. And the anemone or clematis fang can cause a rash. When pruning them, it's a good idea to wear gloves.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I remember something about like weasels, I think.
I don't know about weasels. He does like the. Remember in MGS1, like Cyber Ninja reads off the train line and like all the names of all the trains and stuff, and Colonel does that too, but in rapid fashion.
Yeah.
Mugenoshi. And it's like, yeah, that's the very last one I always remember is Mugenoshi. And then, I was a North American fall webworm in my past life. Oh, those were the good old days. What were you in your former life?
I was running away! That's what I was doing!
Everywhere he does like a almost like a super slow reading of a Mei Ling call, Snake. Remember what De Gaulle said. The graveyards are full of indispensable men. Snake, you're all alone and surrounded by bad guys. Try to be careful and avoid getting into a fight whenever you can.
You are all alone and surrounded by bad guys.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the beginning of the worst text adventure game ever.
Oh, really? Is it actually, or is it just saying
no,
that?
No. I'm just saying.
Oh, speaking of, remember like the cardboard box? I'm freaking Snake's talking about it. Like,
oh yeah.
Let me try doing the voice. Treat the cardboard box with care. Take care of the box, and it'll take care of you. Don't just think of it as a box. Treat it with love. Don't be rough. Okay. And the fifth one is a Zone of the Enders box. And Tengu in Arsenal 2.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man, yeah, then that... Oh, okay, yeah, and then when we cover MGS3, we mustn't forget Naked Snake discovering the box for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like... somehow, I feel like I belong here. This is where I've always belonged. Are you fucking crazy, man?
I can almost probably read the entire thing here now. Snake, what the hell are you doing? I'm in a box. A cardboard box? Why are you... I don't know. I just saw it and decided I wanted to get in here. No. It's something else. It's like my destiny to be in here. Destiny? Somehow I feel safe. Like this is supposed to be where I've been. Inside the box. Uh-huh. You understand what I'm saying? Not even a little bit. You. Just come inside the box. Then you know what I mean. Man, I don't want to know what you mean! Between you and the Major, is everyone just tagging the mission going insane or something? I don't know. Well, maybe that dumbass box will deflect you from... I forgot, I didn't actually do it word for word, but yeah, that's general gist of it. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Just 2 and 3. It's gotta be one more thing in 2 I can just, like, say at the end. I gotta remember, though. But,
That'd be something. You can wing it, I'm sure.
Yeah. But yeah, that cardboard box conversation. When you talk,
man.
Suddenly, like, Snake just, like, for a second there, he's, like... Suddenly, like, he's, like, someone... He's, like, Kojima speaking about the box.
Like, breaks character for just a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I remember all the joke explanations for, like, the box. Like, why there's, like, a cardboard box there. like when Game Center 6 is like, there's this character and like when I was growing up called Boxman. That's what it's all about. And Agno was like, really?
Really?
I just laughed.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, no.
It was always like a great moment, like in the trailer and in the game, when Snake quotes Gray Fox's lines.
Yeah.
Like when he's like, yeah, there's something an old friend of mine used to say. We're not tools of the government or anyone else. Fighting is the only thing I was ever good at, but at least I always fought for what I believed in.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah.
That's right. Gray Fox, represent! Yeah, then, you know,
Fox!
If you...
Fox!
No! Stomp, 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 crush, squish.
I might do, like, another episode with Ryan Kincaid, like the...
Yep.
When we, yeah, like, this is, like, the George Cohorse edition.
Oh, okay, yeah, this is my half, and then he'll have the other half.
Yeah.
All right,
and
cool.
It'll be, like, his, the Ryan's, like, the George side. Flip the disc over, or, like, switch the disc two for the Ryan side. And then the substance cut will be, like, that epic tangent of ours.
Oh, God. Snake, it's time to change discs. Oh, wait, you're on a PlayStation 3.
I love how like, Nauticon sounds so, like, smarmy about it. Snake, it's time to switch discs. Do you have disc 2 or something like that? It's like, no. Oh, wait. You're on a Blu-ray disc. That's right. Dual layer, too. No need to swap. Damn it, Otacon, get a grip. What an age we live in. What would they think of next, huh? And then just cuts the call off.
Right, and then, yeah, then the call just ends. So like,
It was great that it was at that very point where you did switch in at disc 1, like right before you go into like that stairway, yeah.
Yeah.
Overhead view. Oh, we're not getting an MGS4.
Oh man, that'll be several hours unto itself.
Going back to Shadow Moses, I want to go back to Big Shell. Raise the Big Shell again. Come on. I don't care. Arsenal, bring Arsenal back. Bring Peace Walker back. You never played Peace Walker, right?
I haven't. No.
Oh well, you probably get the 360 version, right? So you can probably everyone that didn't play Peace Walker like didn't have a PSP and have a 360 and they'll play it and like have Xbox Live and like actually like do the co-ops and that'll be great. That'd be great to, like, have people actually play it again. Maybe I'll get an Xbox 360 to co-op with you guys.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely going
to
happen.
It'd be hilarious to suddenly have the squad cast, like, co-ops. Like, even though we don't do it in that format anymore, like, have the squad, like, the squadron, like co-ops, Peace Walker.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I think we need to,
The squadron is a division of Militaire Sans Frontier. What is it called? The MSF. Yeah,
the squad needs to do a lot more game nights, a lot more co-op missions.
Co-ops.
Co-ops. Co-operations.
Yeah. Transforming.
Oh, God.
Did you see that video?
Yes, I did. Transforming.
I skipped over a lot of it, but I just watched the end of that video because it was hilarious. The end of the MX64 thing. It's like, why are you vacuuming, Kojima? and then like the shot of the person supposed to be represented, 360 gamer, has the three like globes on his top, and then suddenly the wizard behind him. 360 version.
Yeah. He was doing the Sam Fisher goggles.
Yeah.
All right.
The MGS4 and on the MGS3 engine, like of a Snake in the sneaky suit, but with the goggles.
Oh, God.
And obviously, like, the third light is not turned on because he doesn't have a third eye. He's using it as the actual goggles so he doesn't turn off the third light. And it's, like, all dark, and suddenly lights turn on, and he's like, oh!
Oh, shit!
He's staring at Ryan, and he's, like, staring each other down. And Ryan has, like, glitters on him. A tumbleweed. They run for the main character chair!
Oh, man. That video, the No Room for Hideo video.
Yeah. No place for Hideo. And then
no place for Hideo, that's right.
No replacement for Hideo.
Ha ha ha! Of course.
It always felt so weird, like when the Snake pulls out that X M16 just guns out, and all the people like sitting in the chairs, like, did Hideo just kill his development team? What's going on?
What's going on? I don't understand. What does it all mean?
It pulls out the mask, and then people start laughing and they go boo. One of the voices sounds like he says, "Go home." God damn, you know, it'd be awesome if, like, they won't do it, but god damn, they should remaster Document while they're at it.
Oh, man.
That'd be a killer pre-order bonus. like a pre-order MGS like HD collection and get Document like as a download.
Wow, yeah. That would be cool, get like an HD version of the Document of MGS 2.
Yeah, but that
I would pre-order for that.
Yeah. They had that little video in a Document where it's like they recorded the moment where they got the facts that MGS 2 hit gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then everyone's like cheering and they're like, ah! And then like there's that video where like everyone's like in the room like part like they're starting the party.
Yeah.
Like there's still the celebration and like they open the wine bottle and then the foam goes out and someone says something that makes everyone laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And they all cheer and like there's that line. So I forgot what the line is at the end, but it's like, this is why I keep making games. And it's like Hideo Kojima. I almost want to bring him Document one day, be like, please sign this. Like, you know, instead of like having it like signing Peace Walker twice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be. I think that would probably be the best thing to have him sign, since it's like.
And him sign outside and the inside of Peace Walker. I was like, who else is gonna do that? No one. I'm gonna get him to sign both sides. Why not?
I am the only person to have gotten a copy of Peace Walker signed on both sides.
It's like the inside is like all white. It's like, I need something here that's special. Kojima's autograph.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, yeah, I think I'm probably going to have to switch over to AJ pretty soon.
Yep.
Gonna need me to get on there. Man, I haven't done a podcast in a while.
Thank you so much.
No worries, dude. Thank you for having
me
on.
Thank you so much, George, of course, for coming on here. Talk about MGS 2 for me. With me.
much appreciated. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to doing MGS 3 and 4 at some point soon.
Never touched Portable Ops, did you?
No, I didn't.
That's alright. Well, we'll wrap in, like, Portable Ops and Peace Walker into the 4 discussion, I guess. Because those were, like, so tied into MGS.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Peace Walker to 3, but, like, Portable Ops to 4, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening. If you listened like for the hour and a half or so of this episode,
woo! Thanks for listening to me ramble about a bunch of shit that I don't know anything about.
All right, I guess I'll close it out with the scissors.
Okay, all right.
I hear it's amazing when the purple stuffed worm in Flapjaw space with the tunie fork does a raw blink on Harry Carry Rock. I need scissors 61.
Bravo, sir. Bravo. Right.
Good night, and thanks for listening. And good E3. This is the last day of E3, so good E3. Have a happy E3, everyone.